Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. As Massachusetts voters prepare to elect a new governor, one of the perennial questions in a political race involves how far the press should probe a candidate's private life. Matt Bai, a reporter for the New York Times, wrote recently about this in a piece he called Original Sin.
It tells the sensational story of Gary Hart's presidential campaign in 1987 and how it came crashing down amidst revelations of an extramarital affair.
As Bai writes, it was an unprecedented collision of media, politics, and sex. Before that moment, Bai says journalists pretty much stayed out of politicians' private lives.
Presidents from Roosevelt to Kennedy to Johnson got a free pass despite evidence of marital infidelity. But beginning with the Gary Hart scandal, private mores and sexual behavior became part of the regular political conversation, from Bill Clinton to Jesse Jackson to General David Petraeus.
And Matt Bai says this shift has damaged political journalism and our political culture. But is he right? We talked about this with Tom Fiedler, who played a central role in the Gary Hart story. Today, Fiedler is the dean of BU's College of Communication. But back in 1987, he was a political reporter for the Miami Herald, who published the explosive investigative story that ended Gary Hart's quest for the presidency.
The story transfixed the nation, not only because of the lurid details of a journalistic sting, sex, and denials, but also, as Tom Fiedler reminds us, because of who Gary Hart was and how close the handsome senator from Colorado came to being president.
And the polls clearly showed that. He had double-digit leads over any of the other opponents out there. And in fact, he had double-digit lead over the likely Republican nominee, the Vice President of the United States, George H.W. Bush.
Right. And so it looked like his race to lose at that point.
I think that's exactly right. Very charismatic, bright, rising star.
But there were rumors that Hart had an appetite for women. It was also well known that he had had marital problems and that he'd been separated from his wife. So Tom Fiedler says it was impossible to ignore the fact that Gary Hart announced he was running for president with his wife at his side.
When he announced for the presidency in April, he made a big point of being back with his wife, and he also talked a great deal about the importance of integrity and ethics. In fact, he said there that he wanted to be held to the very highest standard of ethical behavior. However, perhaps, again, ironically, on that very week, Newsweek magazine, Howard Fineman, the political writer, had done a profile of Senator Hart, and he brought up, I think very discreetly, well into the piece, this question of Gary Hart's reputation as that he was a, quote, womanizer. Mm-hmm. And he quoted a close friend of Gary Hart's as essentially saying that this election is his to be had if he could keep his zipper up. I think those were the words. Here was this quote in Newsweek. So it became one of those things that the reporters were pushing very hard on.
Here's where I'm really interested and intrigued about what Matt Bai wrote. He makes the point that this really was the first time a modern politician was investigated for personal and private transgressions, mm-hmm. right? So, and Bai points out that presidents from Franklin Roosevelt to Lyndon Johnson to John F. Kennedy, reporters knew they had dalliances on the side, and yet they didn't report on it. Mm-hmm. So what changed? What was different about Gary Hart?
Well, I think the clear point of demarcation was the what were considered the reforms in the way that the presidential process would carry out, how somebody would actually win the nomination. Prior to and up to 1968, the nominees for the parties were basically chosen by the boys in the back room, you know, the smoke-filled back rooms. So basically, you'd go to the convention and the candidate would kind of pop out and the party would rally around him, always a him, and that would be it. And the press would go along and focus primarily on the candidate's statements, the cover the campaign itself, almost as a scribe. After 1968, they came up with the idea that the primary process as we know it would go on. So a candidate would run that marathon. You know, you start in Iowa and you see how you do there, get a couple delegates, you go on to New Hampshire, get a few more, and you go state by state. And so it pushed the party leadership really out of the process. And so the press began to move in to fill what was a vacuum. Someone had to vet who these candidates are. What is this person's real record, and what is that person's character? And that began to take hold as part of the press's mission. But suddenly you had the leading presidential candidate caught in a relationship with a woman who was a very attractive model at a resort in Miami, the Turnberry Isle Resort, that, you know, if there was a reality TV show for Miami Vice, it would have been Turnberry Isle. This was a place where you had beautiful women, rich, powerful men, many of them involved in the drug business. And for Gary Hart to turn up with a woman in that setting was absolutely shocking. And I think that's why that story just took off.
Mm. Yeah. And how did it first come, the particulars of that story first come to your attention?
I was watching these press conferences where he had to keep pushing back on the allegation, the womanizing allegation that Newsweek had brought up. And I thought from a journalistic standpoint, this was an important issue. And I wrote a front page story, as it turned out, about where is the line between a candidate's public life and private life? How far is the press entitled to go, especially when you're dealing with an allegation that has not been proved? And in my story, I said at this point, this is a rumor, and the media could well be accused of rumor mongering. I think I used that word. So that story ran on page one of the Herald.
So basically, this story is saying at this point, these are just rumors, right, and it's not
and it wasn't journalistically sound, is what I was saying. I think journalists are off base here because they've got no proof. You're just pushing a rumor. And that night, the night the story ran, I got a call from a woman who was part of this group of young women who hung around in Turnberry Island. She told me the story of Gary Hart being there, of Gary Hart having this relationship with a woman we came to know as Donna Rice, going off on the boat trip to Bimini and all of those things. And she told me, I didn't believe her at first. I told her I needed proof. And the next day, she called me back and she gave me further details that following weekend, this woman, Donna Rice, would go to Washington, spend the weekend with Senator Hart. That's where we basically followed that tip and encountered it, turned out to be true, and we confronted him.
This is a fascinating part of the story, and just to sort of, again, as a piece of history, it's so interesting. Tell us about that.
Right.
This was basically a stakeout outside his house. What happened?
Well, it was a stakeout, although I'd be embarrassed to use that term because we were hardly professional at that. The first reporter who went up, this was Jim McGee, who was really one of the top investigative reporters at the Miami Herald. When he got to Washington, in fact, and then went to the townhouse where Senator Hart was, in fact, he then saw Senator Hart with this woman, this beautiful woman, coming out of the townhouse. But Jim didn't cover politics, and he didn't really know Gary Hart other than as a picture in the newspapers. So he called me. He said, "You've got to be here to see what I'm seeing because, you know, this could well be the essence of this tip."
The smoking gun.
So I flew up with the investigations editor, Jim Savage. We brought someone over from our Washington bureau, and a photographer came. And our whole point in being there was really just to verify what Jim McGee had seen the night before and, you know, confront Senator Hart. We ended up being there all day, well into the night. And then Senator Hart did emerge with Donna Rice on his arm, and that led to a rather dramatic confrontation interview where he essentially, I wouldn't say he confirmed everything we had, but he wasn't able to refute or rebut. So we decided that what we had gone to verify, in fact, had been verified, and we wrote the story.
And what was it like to confront him? I mean, how did he respond?
High tension, as you would imagine. I think at that point he realized this is very serious. And I told him that it was. I said to him then, I said, "Senator, you've really got to explain this. You've got to help us understand what's happening, because otherwise," I said, "you of all people know how damaging this might be to your campaign." And it was high tension. It was 20 minutes. We talked for 20 minutes. We attempted several times to ask him to let us talk with Donna Rice, which he wouldn't do. the question that Jim McGee said to him, Senator, are you having an affair with this woman? And he basically said, that's the end. I'm not talking. And he turned and went into his townhouse.
Very uncomfortable situation. And I understand you're doing a job as a journalist. But I'm just curious, did you have any second thoughts about confronting him around this question? I mean, just because it's so bloody awkward, obviously.
Yeah, terribly awkward. And I have to say that I felt terribly awkward. I said, this is not what I became a journalist to do. And I considered myself to be, I was a serious political writer. And I believed in that process and I enjoyed it very much. And suddenly here I am, the personal confrontation. Yeah, it was very tense, and clearly Senator Hart recognized that this was possibly a campaign-ending kind of a thing. But he also was prepared to fight, and the 24, 48 hours after we ran the story were maybe the hardest period, the hardest time in my life, because he was denying it. His campaign was pulling out every stop to attack us, claim that we got it wrong. And I kept thinking, what could we have missed? Is something we just didn't see or didn't get? Those 48 hours of sleeplessness, and that was hard.
I want to ask you about the amazing front page story that the Miami Herald published. And again, I want to come back to what Matt Bai wrote about it. He said, it captures in agonizing detail the very moment when the walls between the public and private lives of candidates, between politics and celebrity, came tumbling down forever. Do you think that's right, or is that an overstatement?
I would – it's very dramatic, quite dramatically written. I don't know that I felt the weight of the earth shifting its axis, as he seems to suggest. It was clearly in that campaign with that candidacy – you could say at that moment that that's when Gary Hart's candidacy began to crumble. Yeah. But as I mentioned earlier, I think it had fallen to the press at that point to look into who these candidates are really. And I believed then and believe today that character does matter, that positions that people take on issues during a campaign can change. But what doesn't change is somebody's character, and voters make up their minds probably more than any other thing on who they think this candidate really is, and do the values align? And I think that's where we found ourselves. We were going to the very core of Gary Hart's character with that story, and it was a difficult place to be because it involved adultery and the role that adultery plays in our culture anyway. That was a very hard place to be.
Again, one of the things that struck me about Matt Bai's piece is sort of implicit in his piece is this idea that this shift to focusing on the personal might have hurt us.
I don't know that it – even if it did hurt us, I think the question would be, what is the role of the journalist? And, our role isn't necessarily to be popular, to be liked. I think what our role is to deliver information as honestly and as ethically as we possibly can, even when that information is uncomfortable and awkward. The polls – it's interesting – in the weeks after our story came out, the Gallup polls anyway – 2-1 said that this was – the Miami Herald went too far. This was just information that we didn't really need to have or know. And yet, by 2-1, people in the same poll said, yes, this information was important in making up their mind as to how to vote. So it does say something about who these people are, and I think the press – needs to go there, not with happiness, not with joy. I don't think you never saw high fives in the Miami Herald newsroom about this story.
Well, final question. 30 years ago, this story was published. Have you had occasion to meet or talk with Gary Hart since then?
Only once, and I say meet, encounter is the better word, walking into a hotel lobby in Nashua, New Hampshire, walking through the revolving door. I walked in from outside, and as the door kind of spit me out into the lobby, 5 feet ahead of me, as close as you and I are now, was Gary Hart looking straight at me with a couple of his aides, and the aides immediately inserted themselves between the two of us and said, why are you stalking Gary Hart? I said, I'm not stalking him. I happen to be staying at this hotel. And and they pulled him away. That was the end of it. He has said, in fact, in print, he has said that hell will freeze over before he would talk to the Miami Herald. So I think that's probably the way it will stay.
All right. Well, Tom Fiedler, he was a political reporter for the Miami Herald. Now he's the dean of the College of Communications at Boston University. Thanks so much for coming in. This was really, really, really fascinating.
Thank you, Anthony.
And you can find a link, by the way, to Matt Bai's New York Times piece on the downfall of Gary Hart 30 years ago at radioboston.org.
There's more of the show in just a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.